Doctor, how are you?
Very well, thanks. Nice being with you.
You know, Mr. Swartz, when it's time for me to call it a life, I want to have a life like you have had from the aspect of you've just done a lot, being a physician and working as a legislator and now teaching. Man, you're having a lot of fun, aren't you?
Yeah, life is good.
Well, let's talk. I've got a menagerie of topics I want to talk about. But first and foremost, I guess, is you ran as a Republican when you were in Congress, and you're not a Republican anymore.
Well, no, that's not quite so. I consider myself center-right, which is where I think probably almost 50% of Americans are right now. And I'm very strongly supporting Rick Snyder for governor and working to help get Rick elected, but I can't say I've ever voted a straight ticket. I pick the candidate and not the party, and my allegiance is to my community and my state and my country, not to a particular political party.
Then why did you decide to support Democrat Mark Schauer as opposed to Republican Tim Walberg?
It's consistent with support I've given to candidates before, and that is this. I'm concerned about my community and other communities in the 7th Congressional District, whether it's Jackson or Battle Creek or Delta Township or Windsor Township up in Eden County or Charlotte or Albion or Marshall, suburban Ann Arbor, you name it. And Mark Schauer is a community guy. He's a guy that came up through local government and understands what needs to be done in communities and local units of government. Are going to have a tough couple of years coming down the road. Revenue sharing funds are going to go away to a great extent. I wouldn't be surprised to see some local units of government go bankrupt, default perhaps on bonds. So Schauer is a guy that understands local government. He's a guy that's been in local government. And I think for this time in our history, he is the better of the two candidates, ergo I'm supporting him.
Why is he the better of the two?
Because I think he has a soft spot in his heart for local government. He understands that's where it all is, and he will do what he can to help shore up local government when it needs to be shored up. And this is important to all of us, whether you're talking about, you know, police and fire protection, parks and recreation, roads. You're also talking about K-12 education and all of our local school districts. I mean, I want a guy that understands what goes on locally, is not an ideologue of the right or the left, for that matter, representing me in Congress. And I think Mark, while I don't agree with him on everything, in fact, there's a lot of things I probably don't agree with him on. I think Mark is the better of the two candidates, and I have no compunction whatsoever about supporting him.
If you would have been in Congress, would you have voted for the federal stimulus? Would you have voted for Obama health care? Would you have voted to extend unemployment benefits?
I would have voted to extend unemployment benefits. I would have voted for the stimulus, and I would have voted against the health care bill.
Okay. Well, as a Republican, many Republicans were battling against the stimulus package, as well as extended unemployment benefits, which I'm sure you're well aware of we needed here in the state. Why would you have gone against the grain?
Gone against the grain and what?
The Republicans as a whole were against those items.
Well, I would have gone against the Republicans on the stimulus and on extension of unemployment benefits, but that's been my history. I'm an independent guy, and I have always voted my conscience and what I thought was best for the people I represented in my community. And given the opportunity to do it again, I'd do precisely the same thing, unapologetically.
Well, I found it very interesting when doing the research about this, because I knew what you were going to say because of things you said in the past. We don't like to use labels on this program very often, even Democratic or Republican, but in having conversations with Mike Rogers, he's told us, you know what, sometimes you do what's best for your state, even though it goes against the grain for what your party wants, and I just found that's the way you seem to roll also.
I'm glad my friend Mike feels that way. I know that he does, and that he's voted that way, and that's precisely the way I feel.
When we talk about the governor's race, you're supporting Rick Snyder. Why is Rick Snyder a better candidate than Virge Bonnero?
I think he's got a better idea of what needs to be done for the Michigan economy, and he has a record out there in the private sector, and he's not weighted down with I think a lot of concepts of how state government should be run that it happens when you're in state government a long time. I expect it probably has happened to me, but I like Rick. He's got some good ideas. He's a very, very bright guy. He doesn't come with any baggage. And his emphasis is on the right issue, which is jobs, jobs, jobs. It's the economy and nothing else but the economy in Michigan right now. And everything else is a distraction.
What can be done to create jobs in the state of Michigan?
We've got to make the place attractive. We have to say we're going to be home to entrepreneurs in the biosciences. We're going to be home to entrepreneurial companies in energy. But the other thing we need to do, and we have to remember this, there's still a lot of auto-related jobs in this state, and they're going to continue to be auto-related jobs in this state. Whether it's making cars or making things that go into cars or making things that go into things that go into cars. So we have to also protect that part of our economy, and we're foolish if we don't. But we also have to look at diversification, which is a word that's been used from time immemorial, and I'm going to use it again. But those are things we have to do, and it doesn't come easily. It doesn't come overnight. And we have to structure state government to make Michigan a welcoming place for outside investment, and I believe that's what Rick will do, given the opportunity.
When you were in Congress, obviously it was a different day and times were much better in Michigan. But from what I've learned over the last year is that what we have done to business, to handcuff them, you will, and what we've done with this business tax has been something that occurred over a period of time. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on it. From your perspective, how did this happen? How do we allow this to happen?
Well, we had the single business tax. I think it started in 1978, which basically was a value-added tax, and we were pretty unique in that, and not unique in a good way. And then people got tired of that, as you know, 4 years ago, and at the 11th hour, past the 11th hour, actually into the new fiscal year, the Michigan business tax with its surcharges was passed as a stopgap measure. You know, it was kind of a, what do we do now? Well, I guess we'll do this. It's unsatisfactory, and one of the things that Snyder recommends, and I certainly agree with him, is just take down the business tax that we have now. Start with a blank slate, and let's construct a business tax in Michigan that's fair. And he's suggesting a 6% business income tax, and I think that's fair, and it comports with what other states do. But that's only a beginning. I mean, we have to look at all the ways we tax, all the sources of revenue in this state, and do what's right, do what's fair, keep essential state services, things that are not essential, I think at this time and this place in our history, have to go.
We're talking with former congressman and current physician, Dr. Joe Schwartz, on the Tony Connolly Morning Show on 1320 WILS. Mr. Schwartz is a visiting lecturer at the Gerald R. Ford School for Public Policy at the University of Michigan. Mr. Schwartz, when we talk about China, how do we deal with the huge deficit when we talk about trade when we have so much, when we're in so much debt to them? They have so many notes on this country that are valued in trillions and trillions of dollars.
Well, yeah, it's not only China. I mean, we've sold debt, and the federal government, only the federal government in one state, Vermont, can have a budget that's not balanced. All the rest of the states are required constitutionally to have a balanced budget. So we go further and further in debt. But it's not just China. I mean, people like to point at China, but there are a lot of people holding our paper. And that's one of the things that Congress has got to do is to reel in spending. and understand that there are things that we could do even 5 years ago that we can't do now. And that's one of the reasons I think there'll be such a significant change in the membership of Congress after this election. And hopefully, spending will be reined in, and hopefully the administration will understand there are places where they can spend and should spend, and other places where they shouldn't. And the biggest example of that, of course, is Obamacare health care, where nobody even knows, nobody has a real idea of how much it's going to cost, but it's going to be astronomical. But a lot of these things don't click in until 2012, 2014, and even after. So we haven't watched our spending very well, and it's time to start. And yeah, I think the new Congress will do it. Even if the Republicans don't take over the majority in the U.S. House, they'll be very close, and they will become an effective minority, which they aren't now. They're an ineffective minority because they're such a minority.
So you think once they get settled into office that they will start attacking this budget deficit?
I'm hopeful. I'm ever hopeful. You don't know that the dynamic in the U.S. House of Representatives is something that you have to witness to even begin to try to understand. And I say try to understand because I'm not certain I ever really understood it. But I do understand this, that there are going to be a lot of changes. And if you look at the membership of the U.S. House, say 4 years ago or 6 years ago, and then look at what the membership will be after January 1st, 2011, you're going to see probably a 60 to 65% change in membership. And I'm hopeful that those new members might even elect new leaders in the House that will have some fiscal discipline. They're going to have to, as is the administration. The administration is going to have to practice fiscal discipline as well, because the biggest danger we face in this country now is the debt. And it's devaluing the currency, and it's making us very, very difficult to trade with. A lot of people just aren't sure they want to park their money in the United States as they used to be.
We've got a couple of more questions for Dr. Joe Swartz on the Tony Conley Morning Show on 1320 WILS. At my house, my wife is in charge of the budget. I don't care about that stuff. It doesn't interest me. But what I do know is that she likes it when we sit down and I see the budget she's put together and I throw my 2 cents in. And I know and understand about it. And we know when we can spend and when we can't. It's bottom line. But if you look at historically, Congress never seems to have been able to pull the reins in, if you will, and say, all right, let's cut spending. So why are you optimistic that it's going to get done in the next couple of years?
Well, the old saying, show them death and they'll take the alternative. That's what they're facing right now. I mean, it's out of control, and from a fiscal standpoint, we are kind of facing death. And my hope is that Congress will take the alternative.
Do you think about getting back into the political game?
Well, I'm always in the political game. I'm just not in it as an elected official now. But I am always active in various and sundry public policy issues, and will continue to be. Elective politics, I don't see that in the future.
All right, and before we let you go, I want to get your take. How important is Detroit and the success of Detroit for the state of Michigan?
It's critically important, especially it's important in the way people view the state. And there are things that have to be done in Detroit. Electing Dave Bing mayor was a great step forward, in my opinion, but they've got to reorganize their government now and go to a ward system, so each member of the city council has an area that they represent, and they're responsible for that. It's much better than what they have now with all the at-large elected people, much like Chicago. Chicago has 50 aldermanic districts. 50 people represent them. They're responsible for a certain part of the city, and it works a lot better. So, yes, Detroit is it's critical. It's 700 and some thousand people in Detroit, and we can't let Detroit fail. We can't let the schools fail.
You know,
it may come to a state takeover, a vote, but we can't let them fail.
And one more question. I made myself a quick note here about the topic of budgets, and you had mentioned that going to a budget that is more than 1 year. It's interesting that you bring that up. I had L. Brooks Patterson on the program earlier this week, and I asked him about his budget, which stands at 3 years, used to be two, and he think that that would be very productive for the state of Michigan, and obviously you agree.
Right now, I didn't used to be in favor of biennial budgeting, but you can teach an old dog new tricks. And right now, my feeling would be it would be to our benefit for the state to do a two-year budget. You could just anticipate a little better what's around the corner. And this annual budget now is, as you know, it's just very, very difficult to get one done. And a two-year budget, I think, probably is the way to go. You'd have to rewrite some statute to do it, but that's not impossible. And the legislature could mandate that upon itself.
All right. Thanks so much, Dr. Swartz. Enjoyed the conversation. Can't wait to talk with you again.
Thanks very much, Tony. Nice being with you.